Welcome to Conscious Communication, the podcast that can help you improve your company's culture and better your team's communication, helping you build more significant relationships. Now here's your host, Philip Bogolub.
I have the privilege and honor of talking with Paula White. We've been talking for about 20 minutes before we hit the record button. Paula assists companies and teams in navigating through conflicts and making successful pivots. Let me repeat that. Navigating through conflicts and making successful pivots. You could use that for your personal life too.
Yeah, absolutely you could.
That just came out so glaringly. She works with communication challenges. Hello, conscious communication. She was a rock star for over two decades, turning sales teams into chart-topping hits, and she'll tell that story. But I don't want to get into any more of those. Let's have her tell the story. Paula, thank you very much for being on the show. I really appreciate it.
Oh, Philip, so great to be here. As you know, this is something I've been looking forward to for a long time.
Paula and I have talked before. Usually the people that I interview, I don't talk to them. It's usually 15, 20 minutes, maybe at the most. I get all the information, get out because I want it to be fresh. And with Paula, because we've talked about music, we've talked about philosophy, we talked about so many things, family. She's a wonderful person. And yes, I am biased because we've known each other for not that long. How long?
About 8 months.
About 8 months. And yeah. we haven't talked that much, but it's like a kindred spirit. And we're attracting each other to this. We've talked about EST, those of you who've ever heard of the Earhart Seminar Training and different things. So we have a lot of things of energy that sometime we'll be working together in the future. I know we will. Don't know why or how, but it will be. So I want to thank you again for being on the show, but I'm going to ask you, what was that serendipity? What was that accident? What was that coincidence? I know, but I want you to share it with the audience that happened to you in your life that got you to where you are now. And I know there's a lot, but give that main thing that pops in your head so the audience can understand where you are, why you are doing what you're doing and where you came from.
Oh my gosh. So let's talk about the concert. Right? And so there we are.
Do it.
It was 2018 and I was at a business meeting in Atlanta. Brought my husband down with me just for a long weekend after that because it happened on the business meeting was Thursday and Friday afternoon or morning. I looked to see who was playing in the area and the Struts were playing. My favorite band, my favorite new and upcoming band at the time, were playing at this quaint venue. So I talked to my husband and we went Friday night with VIP tickets.
Cool.
Oh my gosh. It was amazing. So I wanted to meet them, but I got the tickets so I could go sit up front, right? See them.
Okay.
Up front.
Right.
So we were kind of in the middle of the line, get up there, get our picture taken with them. I walk around to the room and I stop and I look around and my husband's looking around and in these quaint venues and in these up and coming bands, the middle is general admission, standing room only.
Okay.
I was 52 at the time.
Okay.
52, 53. I was not going to be standing in a mosh pit. No.
Not anymore. No.
No. So we ran under the balcony rope, up to the balcony, got center stage and first row balcony.
Excellent.
Best seats in the house.
There you go.
And as I'm singing along, singing with all the songs, out of tune, of course, but having a blast, I look down and I see, I couldn't take my eyes off of it. I see this reaction from the fans and the band. And they were feeding off of each other and they were going back and forth and back and forth, you know, really positive energy feeding off of each other. And in that moment, I thought, why can't leaders and their employees do the same thing?
Excellent.
It was my aha moment. I went home that night or went back to the hotel that night, couldn't sleep, started writing out all of this. Side B, side A.
You were still in corporate America.
I was still in corporate America.
Okay.
Still growing my team. started implementing some of the strategies that I was thinking about.
Really?
And honestly, we grew 8 to 10% over prior year every year.
Whoa.
From then.
Whoa. And how, and when you were doing that and you had these ideas and stuff, was there a price to pay? Well, how did you get through that? And how did you end up being on your own where you're at right now?
Well, interestingly enough, the price to pay was for me. I am a self-proclaimed, probably textbook workaholic.
Okay.
And
what, define workaholic for yourself. So the audience can know, because everybody's got different definitions of it. What is a workaholic?
So workaholic for me is nobody is going to outbeat me, out-sustain me. I'm going to be there, make sure that we're successful as a team, and drive revenue for the company.
Got it. No matter what.
No matter what.
Okay. All right. So continue on. That was what you were doing, a workaholic. So what happened?
So I started implementing some of these communication changes, some of this conscious communication, conscious listening that you and I talk about. Some of these, a friend of mine told me, and I wrote this in the book, a friend of mine told me, flip the org chart. And that was my second aha moment. Usually in an org chart, the CEO's at the top, right, and your VPs, then your people, all the way down to customer care. Right. Where's the client?
That's true. There is no, there's nothing.
So flip the org chart with the client customer at the top. Who's the first that they run into? So you've got your customer care, and the CEO is at the bottom.
And they never talk to the CEO.
They never talk to the CEO.
No. They don't talk to the accounting manager. They might talk to the salespeople, yeah, but not the account. So they meet customers. Yeah, you're right. You're flipping it on, you know, calling back to corporate America here. Yeah, the first line, oh, so the sales guy sold something for x-ray tubes. Then when there's a problem, they called me.
That's right.
And then from me, they have to call customer service to order a new part.
Right.
They will most likely never talk to the salesman again. They're never going to talk to any internal people in accounting, the CEO, the CFO, the management, never talk to anyone. And that's an interesting, because if you, so you, oh, I love this. So we've talked about this before, but not to this depth. So when you flip that chart, how does that change the way a company looks at things?
Who are you working for?
I'm working for the client.
You're working for the client. Everyone always says, I've got to work for my boss. What does my boss need? What do I need? Right? You flip the org chart. So my was working for my team. My team was working for the client, the customers. So I was working for my team.
When I went out for the, I mean, I was there for over 25 years. For pretty much the first half of my career there, I was the only one. Till the business started getting bigger and I had to hire somebody and blah, blah, blah. I was the representative.
Yeah.
They didn't know my manager. They didn't know the CEO, the CFO, the head of engineering, the head of shipping department, the head of the design department. They knew nothing. That's all. When I was sent out, they said, Philip, tell us what doesn't work in the real world.
Yeah.
Because, you know, they didn't know. So my priority was always the customer. And when somebody griped and going, well, this is going to cost more money, I'm just like, well, it costs more money if we don't make any money.
Exactly.
You know, so I love that. So go more into how that client customer service, how you flipped it works, and how that, well, how you got there with this thing. What did you go through just to get to where you're at now?
Well, really, interestingly enough, I really didn't have to go through anything but a mindset change. And that mindset change was that I work for my team. And in any interview that I did, in any team meeting that I held, I really managed it to a point of, my job is to work for you. And I cannot, my job was to work for them. Now, I had stuff that I had to say no to. I had things that I still had to manage for right. the department, for right. the company.
Right.
Right. It wasn't a, you say it, I'll do it
right.
to the team.
Right.
It was, tell me. I was more open to listening and having those conversations with the team so that I could bring back and work that backwards.
So what are you, when you're doing this now on your own, what are you bringing to, what are you offering to somebody? I love the concept. Flip it on its head. So when you go into something, there's one of the things that we've talked about before. Well, I want to talk about four zones of listening, but how do you create the environment for everyone to be a rock star? Like, how we listen to people, the way we listen to music, how we listen to people is how the way we listen to music. And I love that, how that mixture of those two things, because that's, for me, as being a composer and you loving music, it makes total sense, because music, you could turn on a song that makes you cry.
Yeah.
You could turn on a song that makes you happy. You could fill in the blank. And it's the same way within the organization. But if you're looking at it more of the client, how does those two work together?
So think about it this way. If you're in a management or even a customer service or a sales position, your mood will depend on the outcome that the client sees.
Yes, that totally makes sense. If I show up with a pissy attitude, they're going to have a pissy attitude and the whole thing's not going to come back to me.
Right. So we create playlists for individuals that what song makes them happy? What song makes them motivated? What song makes them inspired? So you can change your attitude within 3 minutes.
Yep.
So if you're getting ready to go into a board meeting, you're getting ready to go into a client meeting, and you're just frustrated, flip on a song for 3 minutes before you go in, let it fill you up, and go in with a positive attitude. Then your mind is open to hearing and listening to what is actually being music. But sounds, as you know, there's white noise, black or brown noise, pink noise, green noise, all of these different frequencies now that help people manage their moods.
Yes, and it's true, because I was just marking down some notes. I mean, who represents you? Who represents you? And you're flipping this chart the other way around. I love that, putting it on its head. But if you're using that right frequencies, when you're going into a sales call and you're nervous, which is totally fine. Mm-hmm. When I do live presentations, Paul also does live presentations. If you don't get a little, as they say, butterfly in your belly, there's something wrong with you.
Exactly.
I don't care if it's one person or 100 people or a million people. It doesn't matter. The people doesn't matter, amount of people it is. It's the idea of going in that they're listening to you. And you want to be able to get the right communication out. So getting that right frequency is to match it with the right radio frequency. You don't like the station on the old, for those of you that are too young who don't remember radio, you don't like the station, you push the button. You don't like the station.
Or you tune it a little bit more.
You tune it a little bit. Exactly. You get it to the other radio. You know, there's enough frequencies for people to be on. You can't run out. You know, I've been dealing with the musical and stuff that I'm sure the listeners have heard, but Paula knows, and everything that's been happening with it keeps growing and growing and getting more producers and directors involved. And this is freaking me out, because it's the right frequency. But I didn't have the right frequency for about a year and a half. I had no frequency.
Exactly.
So I just simply meditated on it. I prayed about it. This is what I do. And I just sat there and I go, okay, if it was meant to be, it was meant to be. I don't believe anything's given to you unless you're ready for it and you can do it. Notice I didn't get a epiphany going, you're going to be a brain surgeon. No, no, you're going to be doing things with toupees on balls. So it doesn't matter. You know, I can't do this. And I can't do what Paul is doing, and you can't do what everybody else. So you got that. So keeping that right frequency is super important. And I like the analogy of music, because musical tones, the white noise, the brown noise, the pink noise, whatever the colors are, the colored spectrums of light and the frequencies that are out there will make you, I can watch certain movies that I can feel the dreams. Okay. Mm-hmm. Every one of my kids knew that when I was a kid, they'd always look at me. Here goes dad. He's crying again. Dad, you want to play catch? That's it. I'm done. You know, there's certain movies and lines and certain things like love, relationships, family will just make me not bawling like a 2-year-old, but I get choked up. There was a movie I just watched, something if you haven't called. It's called The Shack.
Have you seen it? I haven't seen that one.
It's a really good movie. I haven't read the book. They said the book is much better. But I liked it because it was a very introspective look. And when you can see something in others that you see in yourself and you open that up, so you're making this more of a personalized.
Very personalized connection, meaningful conversations. Ooh. And when I work with organizations, that is where I go in and we strategize on how to flip the org chart or what's going well, what's not going well, and how to bring people together to collaborate. The one thing you were talking about in movies, have you ever listened to a movie without the background music behind it?
You know, it's interesting you mention that. So I'm a big fan of John Williams for years, way before Star Wars. And George Lucas said, without John Williams was Star Wars. Without the music, it doesn't mean anything. So I expand on that.
Yeah. So it doesn't, because the intensity of somebody walking into a room without the music intensity going, do, you know, whatever it is, they're just walking into a room.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
Or somebody looking out a window. If there's not a love song going on in the back, you're not expecting anything to happen. But then when things do happen, you're like, oh, your heart goes. Because otherwise somebody's just walking by the window, right?
Yes. Yes.
So that music attaches those emotions, and we have to have emotions to have those meaningful conversations to drive revenue, in organizations. So many people today feel not heard, not listened to, and not valued.
But isn't that the way the corporate America has always been?
No. Mm-mm.
You don't think it was that 50 years ago?
Way back when you could actually make a sale on a handshake.
Oh, that way. No, yes. Yes, I was talking about people being heard as in good ideas, but no, I didn't think about it that way. No, yeah. Oh my God, that was there for forever.
Yeah, and if you had an idea, you could bring it up without fear of losing your job.
Yes.
So it hasn't always been this way.
When now, do you think, how long has it been now since we'd be able to have that freedom?
That freedom of not losing our job?
Yeah, by suggesting something and he needs to leave because that wasn't my idea.
Right.
30 years, 20 years?
I was going to say 30 years, probably since technology has stepped in.
Mm. Interesting.
Yeah. And think of it that way. You know, I think you and I've talked about that. Technology has really broken the art of communication between people.
Yeah, we're not communicating anymore. We're not talking to anybody anymore. We're talking through the idiot box. You know, I refer to this. We talked about this before. The idiot box plugged into the walls of the computer. The idiot box is the phone. So I have my nose hurts me today. So I'm going to look at the idiot box. So a bunch of idiots can tell the other idiot, which is me, their idiot stupidity. And then I'm an idiot. And blah 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 blah. We're not communicating. We've talked about that. I forgot about that.
Yeah.
We text, email, instant message. We don't leave a voicemail because nobody checks it, or their voicemails are full and nobody gets back with you. Completely disconnected from the world of communication. This has not connected us more. Now, Paul and I are not saying that this technology is not great. It took me 6 months to install, maybe 8 months to install a CAT scanner in the 80s. Now you take a CAT scanner in 3 days because it's plug and play. Technology to save lives. I'm not saying that. But our communication, it's dead. It's completely cut. I said, well, it's not cut. It's texting. Texting is not communication.
Yeah, not when you get a text that says BRB, LOL, just in whatever. You know, and I'm like, what is BRB? Be right back. Okay.
No. When they did LOL, I thought it was laugh out or love you a lot.
Yeah, I thought so. It was love you lots too. And then the little hands, you know, that look like they're praying. Mm-hmm. Somebody mentioned that they're actually high-fiving.
No, that's praying.
That's what I said, but somebody said they're high-fiving. I'm like, I've been sending that to people I've been really thinking about who are having bad days.
I'm sending you a prayer because I thought that's what... Now I got to look at that stupid emoji.
I know.
No, it is true. I mean, we are just... there was a movie my wife and I were watching. It was one of these cute lovey-dovey movies. I enjoyed it. It was cute, but then they're texting. So it's a movie. So when they're texting, I'm like, hey, Paula, how are you doing? Okay. I stopped the movie. I said, this is what they're saying. I put it on mute, the TV, press the play button again, and that's all you see is the texting. So that's all you're doing. I'm not saying, hey, Paula, how you doing? What's reading to you is, you could read, depending on the mood you're in, you could say, yeah. Hey, Paula, how are you doing? What are you doing? Do you want to go somewhere? Why don't you want to go? This is not communicating. So there's all these people, and they're not young anymore. It could be people that are divorced or their spouses have died and they're dating. This is how they're communicating. You can't communicate. That's not communication. You're hearing, this is what you're hearing. I haven't hit mute, but I should have. That's what you're hearing. Nothing. Nothing. So your interpretation of those email, texting, instant messages, whatever other garbage they call it out there.
DMs.
What's a BM? It's not what I'm thinking of.
B as in dog. Oh, okay. Direct message.
I thought you said BM. Yikes. Oh, please don't take that out of the show. What does that stand for?
Direct message.
Oh, it's all the same stuff. Social media. Oh, okay. But it's like, you know, and then somebody says, so I don't know where somebody came up with the term social media. It is the most unsocial thing in the face of the planet. There's no sociability. Sociability is you and I talking. I know this is over Zoom and this is a good thing, but us meeting, so we haven't met each other in person. Someday we will. And I'm like, oh, how you doing? I met my producer that produces my podcast shows. You know, we're giving hugs and I met his wife and we're having a great, that's connection. That's this other stuff. This is just, you know, I'm going to keep, audience, I'm just going to keep talking. And this is what it is, talking to, I'm really not saying anything right now. That's what we're doing.
That's right.
That's how we're talking. And, go ahead.
And what?
Where? And that's, so in the business world, it's also reflecting in families and relationships and friends, because neither of us are saying technology is bad. Nobody's saying that.
No.
But there's a place for it. When I see a whole family with an advertisement about technology and nobody's talking to each other and they're all sitting on their devices with their text neck, hurting their backs and their necks and their eyes and getting anything out of it. They're not they're just keeping their mind noise busy. That's all they're doing is keeping it busy because they don't want to think about anything. They just want the random thoughts. And when I see these ads, I'm like, this is the families. When you and I are similar enough in age. Yeah. With our kids and then with our parents, we opened up a snack table, had dinner and watched the Carol Burnett show.
Mm-hmm.
But we were together. We were experiencing the experience together. You could be sitting now with a family of five. Not one person is talking to each other. Nobody is even in the same energy. How is that good? How do you learn anything? I'm on my high horse. Get me off my high horse, please.
That's okay, because I'm going to bring it back to the business.
Please.
I'm going to bring it back to, this is where communication is where people can really bring humanity back into the corporate world.
Ooh.
To drive revenue.
How do you do that?
Well, here's the thing. You have to understand that to bring humanity back, you have to have meaningful conversations. You need to know how to listen to people. We've never really been taught how to listen to people except listen to the police officer, listen to your teacher, right? Nobody's really put listening into a framework. And so listening to people and how to use words to really inspire and motivate and keep positive, because people are craving that right now. Your customers are craving that. Your clients are craving conversation.
An emotional attachment. It's not, you know, it's not what it used to be where you went into a store and you had a brief relationship with a salesperson.
Yeah.
It's different now. It's not good. It's not bad. It's just the way it is. And bringing that humanity back into it, how do you approach that with someone who's hiring you to come in and teach them, because you're doing more trainings now for people? How do you approach that for them to be aware of it? Because it's very difficult for people to see it because they're more concerned about the bottom line, which is important.
The bottom line is very important. And I guess that's really what we talk about is what are your goals for the year, right? And how are you going to get there? Okay. Are you getting there the same way by pulling a cost lever, by, you know, eliminating part of your team, by doing some layoffs? You know, what are we doing to do that? Have you ever thought about pulling a communication lever, right?
No.
Instead of a budget lever or a cost lever or a sales lever, a communication, a number one, our number one resource in organizations are our people. So
Go ahead.
Let's look at that on how we can communicate better. So when you're actually in these meaningful conversations, when you flip the org chart and start talking to your teams, you're driving productivity, you're also driving loyalty, and therefore all leading to trust and respect and understanding, which brings the revenue going up and high into the right. Because when you have those things happening, people start getting consistent. The flywheel starts happening, right? Mm-hmm. The organization is going, the people are going. So now we're moving this flywheel that the revenue is going to start generating itself. You're not always training people. You're not always onboarding people. You're not, you know, people activity. Now do it because of trust, respect, to understanding. They're going to do it for you because you listen, you choose words to help them. And it's all about that consciousness and intention that we have with people.
It's, you know, it's the key of communication. We'll refer it back to families. You know, if you, so you flip a family and what's on the bottom is the kids or the dog, or it's not the revenue, it's not paying the bills. But if you're not communicating in a right way, you know, all the stuff that you're talking about applies to everything. Mm-hmm. Everything you do applies to the world, applies mm-hmm. to people, applies to all this noise that's out there because we're not communicating. We're hitting the mute button. We're going blah, 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 blah. We're not, it's just a bunch of noise. And first of all, we need to slow down. How important is it in what you do and what you teach? Silence, having some time.
Silence is golden.
Tell me what you do and what you teach to do that and how you're supplying people with information to understand, okay, we need to just put everything on airplane mode.
Right. So when you are not distracted, well, let's put it this way. The research that I've done shows that we as a human being have an attention span of 3 to 7 seconds before we start to wander off or zone out. That's less than a goldfish. Well, I don't know how they tested the goldfish.
I was going to say that. How would they know?
I don't know, but that's the result that I got.
Oh, my God.
3 to 7 seconds.
Oh, that's pathetic.
Before people start to wander off or zone out. That is really what we need to understand, that if we turn off our phones and stop waiting for the bzz, 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 all the emails and texts coming in, you know, we're not sleeping well because of that too. You really need to put your phone on airplane mode when you're in a business meeting, when you're in an employee meeting, when you're holding those, when you and I are doing this right now.
That's right.
It's got to be on airplane mode. Yep. And if not, then the distraction gets there and we're not completing our sentences. We're not completing our thought. And this is where, I hate to say, this is where AI is better than we are because they can complete a full thought.
Interesting. That is an excellent example because now, so I refer to this, I'm not an AI expert in any sense of the word.
I'm not either.
But a lot of the stuff they're calling AI is just simply programming.
Mm-hmm.
It's been around for 50 years. I'm an old guy. I'm 61. Mm-hmm. When I went to engineering school, there were programs that interpreted stuff. This is not this is not AI to me. But what I don't like is that even before, quote, AI, you could still look up anybody else and plagiarize anything you want. And the problem is, whether you're a college student or high school student in junior high, or whether you're simply in business, is easier to go down a path of using somebody else's thoughts. You want to do that? Go right ahead. You want to use AI to do, and again, I'm not knocking it. I don't know anything about it. This is just not my thing. I'm not an expert in it. I'm not saying it's bad. I'm just saying from my point of view, it communicates laziness.
Mm-hmm.
Communicates laziness. And when you can't think on your own, when you can't simply say, okay, it's time to shut down, it's time to go to airplane mode, you know, how are you going to know? Here, I want to have a question for you. Give me your point of view on multitasking.
Mom. Let's talk about Dodgeball.
The movie? That was a good one.
Multitasking is exactly what we do every day, all the time. It's what I call squirrel, you know. We jump from thing to thing. And if we're not consistent and concise in helping people understand putting a task list together at the end of the night for your morning,
yep,
starts your morning productivity off amazingly.
Interesting.
Because if you wait till the morning to do that, then you're like, okay, what do I have to do? I'm going to go get a cup of coffee. All right. Oh, someone's calling me. Your task list is gone. Yes. But if you do it at the end of the day, then all of a sudden, all those things that you want to accomplish are listed and ready for you in the morning.
It's the prioritization and the so multitasking. There's a video. You can look at this. Has been scientific studies going on for years, but there's videos going back 10, 20 years. And they do this thing where they're playing basketball. Have you seen this one? And do you see the gorilla?
Yes.
You can look it up. People can just look it up. And there's different ones. I remember one specifically. So your brain, your brain only works in one at a time.
Right. And it is called, just for your audience, it's called the moonwalking bear.
Oh, thank you. Okay. Thank you. I didn't know that. But then thank you for clarifying. Now I'm going to look that up after we're done again, because I haven't seen it in a long time. But in electronics and in engineering and in math, there's something called FIFO, first in, first out. There's a reason why it's called first in, first out. Now, I'm getting a little nerdy and geeky and dorky and engineering-like, but there's ones and zeros. Nothing's changed. Everybody says technology's advanced. It hasn't advanced for 50 years. Capacitors, diodes have been around for like 40, 50 years. Capacitors, resistors, all these things, AND gates, all these chips and all this technical stuff, it's still the exact same technology. It's just large-scale integration. They're smaller. They can stuff more information into it, and then they multiply it. So to make it faster, they have four microprocessors instead of one. It's not like they got some alien technology that's really good. But the whole idea is, when you look at technology the way it is, you can't have, if you have a one going out and asking for data to come back as a 10110, you know, whatever that digital data is, it's not going 10 things. It's got to go one at a time, one at a time. Now, you can batch this information and you can put it into a program, but it's still got to do one at a time, one at a time. It can't do it all at once. It works like your brain, your mind. So stop multitasking, because it doesn't work and you make mistakes. And so you're saying to do this priority at the end of the day.
Yeah.
When do you start shutting down everything around you and whether you call it prayer or meditation or whatever you want to call it, to shut down and just kind of get calm before the end of the night? No TV, no eating, no exercising, no blue light, no purple light, whatever the light is that's supposed to be distracting. What do you do to get yourself in there? Do you write that list, or how do you kind of get it down? Because you want sleep. You're talking about sleep. Nobody's sleeping.
Right.
Unless you're the president of a country or a brain surgeon, like we talked about earlier, nobody's going to have a soulful emergency. How do you kind of shut that down? What would be a priority?
So interesting for me is I do most of my conscious thinking when I'm driving.
Oh.
And I don't know if it's the white noise. I don't know if it's the music that I'm playing. But that's when I used to drive 30 minutes from the office to the house. And that's what I'm missing right now. I'm missing that drive because I used to be able to put everything down of what I needed to do. I reflected on the day. What happened? What am I missing? Where can I go? Do I need to speak to somebody? You know, is the client upset? You know, and have all of those things ready. And I would just use my little phone and just talk to myself. And then I had my list, right?
Yeah.
And that worked for me. Now, other people, they'll take, you know, 15, 20 minutes before the day ends. Go take a time to go to the restroom or get a drink of water or soda or something.
Right.
Make sure the phones are off, your cell phone is off, your computer is off, and actually start writing your list out.
I've heard it analog and digital time. So we're, you know, it's a word, it's such a digital world. You know, I don't like everything instantaneous. I don't like to, like I said, if my nose bothers me, I'm not going to look it up at the idiot box. I'm going to talk to somebody. And I'm not, and this is just me. I'm not doing it on my phone. I'm going to the office, going to a doctor's office or whatever I'm going. I want to meet. I need physical contact. I need a handshake. I need somebody to look straight in the eyes. I need to feel that energy because we're energy design machines. We need those things to feed each other. Now, again, this technology that we're doing right now in Zoom, this is fine, but it's still not the same. If we were doing something very creative, we could start that way, but we'd have to meet in person because that energy is completely different.
Correct. And let's get back to the point of that technology is great. I love technology when somebody asks me a question like, well, who was the basketball coach that year? I could look it up real quick, right?
Yes.
That is amazing. You don't have to go to a dictionary or encyclopedia or anything like that. That information is so easy to do.
Yes.
But you're right. That connection and human connection to collaborate really is in person.
One of the things that Paul and I have definitely synced up on since the beginning was our collaborative abilities of thinking beyond. We have a very big imagination. We have a lot of life experience. And that's what I love about connections is that, and that's what I love about doing this and figuring this out, figuring out the whole show. It's been going on for over a year now, and I keep learning more and making it better and changing it and doing it. The audience doesn't have to understand the specifics, but there's things that are changing all the time, and it makes it better, more productive, a better idea, a better concept, and a better business. But people you have to take an analog time. I have to sit and have my cup of tea. I have to sit and when the weather's getting nicer now, it's starting to be springtime. You know, and I look out the window. I find the emotional time of shutting down. Now, for me, sometimes it's my 9 o'clock at night and I'll sit down at the piano, I'll start playing. I normally don't, but sometimes that feeling comes over me and that keeps me creative because you want to be in a creative state when you're going to sleep. You don't want to be watching Night of the Living Dead before you go to sleep. You want to be watching something negative before you go to sleep. Well, you don't want to be watching anything negative at all. But the whole thing is keep it positive and keep it in light of like Paula was saying, you want to be able to have that time for airplane mode. You want to be able to, I still like the idea. I love the idea of flipping that org chart because that's the whole thing that more excited me about our conversation today about what you're doing is flipping that org chart. You're flipping it on its head. You could say, you know, It's a cow or a chicken. What comes out of the chicken? Eggs. That's what we're eating. You know, it applies to so many different things in life because it's not where you're going. It's the path that you're taking. You want to be very focused on different things. There's something that I've said before with people. It doesn't matter what you are doing. It's how you are doing it.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely.
And how you're doing it is in a very different way. In a very different place. Do we talk about the four zones of listening?
Not yet.
Let's talk about the four zones of listening. I love this part. Please tell the audience about it.
Sure. It's a framework I put together. As you mentioned before, we listen to people the way we listen to music. And there is no right or wrong way to listen to people. You just have to understand what zone you're in to get the most beneficial intention and connection time.
Tell me more.
So the first zone is what I call the background zone. And that background zone is like you're on an elevator and the music's playing in the background. You have no intention of listening to it because you're in deep focus. So that zone is really for you. It's personal reflection and deep focus. It is where you go to really be intentional.
Okay.
Now, it can be bad too, because if you're scrolling down your phone and your son, which happened to me, is sitting here talking to me and I go, and I said something and he goes, you're not listening.
No.
So in this zone, we all have a canned response. And I think I asked you what your canned response was, Philip, and you'll have to let us know.
Okay.
But mine was, that's nice.
Right.
And so my son told me this. He goes, Mom, you're not listening. I said, what do you mean I'm not listening? He goes, you say that all the time when you're not listening. I could say the house is on fire and you'd say, that's nice.
Mine's uh-huh.
Uh-huh.
Uh-huh. And plus my wife knows, you know, your friends and your loved ones know you the best, going, you didn't hear a word I just said. Oh my God, it's hysterical.
But once you hear and find out that can, you know, that response, you start recognizing that you're not listening when you should be in zone two, which is reflective. And zone two is really when we get nostalgic. You know, that old song from way back when that takes you back to that hot summer day that you were swimming in the pool or with a significant other, or, you know, and you're like, oh, that song brings me back to the football game or something. When we're holding conversations like that, we need to be careful, because we have listening blockers in there too. And those listening blockers are daydreaming and been there, done that.
Yes.
So when people are talking to us, if we're in the reflective zone, find out, are you just to be listening or problem solving? Right?
All right.
Because the one thing you don't want to do is go back in your own mind and consciousness and say, yeah, I've done this. This is good. Here, this is what you need to do. People don't want that. They want to be heard, right? So there's good and bad for all of that. You can say, you know, I'm reflecting on that happened to me too, but let me hear what you want to hear from me.
Yeah.
Right?
Yes.
And then active listening, we all know what active listening is. And active listening is being, you know, very present, very participative. But it also has its own biases or its own listening blockers. One being your bias. One is having a position or a thought to defend. We're not really opening ourselves up to the unexpected, which is the fourth zone, because we still are holding on to these listening blockers, pretending to be active listening. And let me change that word. We're in this zone where we're really intentional on being with somebody and listening to them, but we're still back in our biases and our listening blockers because we want to defend something. We want to position something. Right. Mm-hmm. So there's different ways that we can use active listening too. It's really great when you are, you know, doing a proposal or a presentation. But if you really, really want to get to know somebody, think of the unexpected. And that is like your favorite group or your favorite band comes out with a song, a new song that is so unexpected from them, that you are hearing the notes, you are hearing each instrument, you're hearing the melodies, you're hearing the lyrics. You are 100% present. There are no listening blockers, and you are taking in everything that they're saying.
I love this breaking down of the four listening groups or four listening zones. because it's if you're aware of how you're listening to somebody, you have to be consciously aware of this. Because if you're not paying attention to what you're listening to, so it was a 60,000 thoughts a day or whatever they came up with this thing with the fish and everything. I love the fish thing. I really want to be there. There was some public test. Somebody got money to test. What was it? Oh, it wasn't a fish. It was like a crab on a treadmill or something. You know, we get the weirdest things. I don't know where these people come up with, but I love the four ways of zones of listening, because when you're talking, I had two things I'm going to bring up, and I usually mark them down so I don't forget them so I can keep listening, but you don't always have that there. So I have learned through managing this over and over again how to train my mind to put that in a little temporary folder. It's called EPROMs, Erasable Programmable Read-Only Memory. Guess what? It's in my brain too. It's in my mind. So I have that there, but it's not overtaking it. Two of the things. So you're talking about songs that make you think. Those of you who are Seinfeld fans remember when there was an episode with Elaine dating somebody and they said, "Which a woman?" And he- yeah. If you're not a Seinfeld fan, I'm sorry. I'm not that. Sorry that you don't like it, but it's just like, you know, if you ever want to watch that episode, it's a Which a woman.
Which a woman.
And then you were talking about being out at the pool or something. So when I was a kid, there's Doobie Brothers songs. I don't remember which one specifically. That when I hear a Doobie Brothers song, I used to go in the backyard and I used to lay out. I didn't do it to lay out and get a tan. I just put the radio on. I listened to a channel called The Loop, 97.9, The Loop. It was a rock station. Great station, great personalities at the time. And I put this blanket out that had like red and black and white stripes. I could picture it as clear as day. Light it out. I just lay on the grass in the back. And again, I wasn't doing it to get a tan. I just wanted to lay outside. And I would open my eyes and I look at the clouds and I dream away. And whether it's Which a Woman or whether it's the Doobie Brothers or whether it's Beyonce, it doesn't really matter to me. It's whatever to be realizing those different frequencies, those different zones of listening is a great way to, again, I'm going back to everything in your life. That's not just business. Mm-mm. This should be able to pass over to your personal life. Now for me, I teach people, you know, some call it an oscilloscope. And those of you who don't know it from the dorky engineer that I am, it's a way to measure alternating current or direct current, AC or DC, not the band, but the things coming out.
Oh, but the band was really good.
Band was awesome. I can't sing like that. When I was younger, somebody said I sang a song. Because I was in a musical a lot early in my life, and this band was practicing in the garage, and I started singing the AC/DC. He goes, "You're doing really good. We want to. Why don't we hire you?" And I was like, I wouldn't have a voice anymore. I still to this day, I don't know why I sang that. But so AC/DC. And when you measure these things in an oscilloscope, it's just like a TV monitor. It's actually measuring what it looks like. Look at the sine wave. Picture an S and picture it on its side. An S and picture it on its side horizontally. And when I do, and there's different kind of waveforms. It's called sawtooth waveforms and all this other stuff. When you look this stuff up, and you can't look it up on the Idiot Box, it actually has pictures of it. And what it is I picture when Paul is talking, I picture I have this monitor in my mind. And as I look at your mouth and it's moving, and I can see the wave moving according to how loud you are talking or how soft you are talking. So for me, that's how I focus. That's how I focus. I'm doing that all the time in my imagination. I'm thinking, okay, this is how I can manage the measurable frequencies of your voice into my mind and keep me off from drifting. And when I start drifting, I'll right back to it. When I start drifting, I'll right back to it. It's imagery for me. It's imagery for me. So you pick the four zones and I fit into all of them. Everybody does.
And we should. We should fit into all of them. There are good and bad in each one of them.
And just be aware of it.
Be aware.
And practice it, and practice it, and practice it. I want to thank you. We could keep talking for hours, but though I think the listeners would say I'm turning this off, I got to go to sleep. I always ask at the end.
I'm zoning out.
I'm zoning out, yes. What am I doing? What am I having for dinner? Or depending on when you live, this could be breakfast, lunch, or dinner, or it could be a snack. So I always ask listeners at the end before we close the show, what is a positive aphorism you can leave us with? You've left a lot of gems, a lot of really good ideas, a lot of good concepts. I love putting putting the sales thing, you know, putting the CEO on the bottom and the customers on the top. But what can you leave with us? Some little tidbit that makes us go, ah. Anything. Doesn't have to be complicated.
Yeah. No, I think the biggest thing is have as many meaningful conversations in a day that you can.
I love that. Intentional, conscious communication, intentionally good. Just don't have a conversation for conversation. Look at it as a way that you can get something, both can get something out of it.
Right.
I love that. Thank you. Thank you very much, Paula, for being on the show. It's been an absolute pleasure. I've been looking forward to having you on the show.
Oh, it's been my pleasure, Philip. And we'll talk again soon.
Absolutely. And remember, it is more important to express your thinking thoughts and not the thoughts you are thinking. That's what we've been talking about. That is what is called conscious communication. See you next time.
Thanks for listening to Conscious Communication. If you enjoyed the show, please rate and recommend on Apple Podcasts, Overcast, or wherever you get your podcast. You can also get more great information at ConsciousCommunicationPodcast.com.